If we have an injury or an event that causes brain dysregulation and you had any prior tendencies, let's call them, it probably would exacerbate that and make them more prominent. I do know, I think of someone that I worked with that had a stutter as a child and then as was a college athlete, and they came in after their second pretty bad concussion within one calendar year, and the stutter was back. So, right, is that, but without a prior EEG, I don't have any data.
Have you ever wondered what really happens in the brain after a concussion and why some athletes struggle long after the hit? Today, we're joined by Lisa Kramer. Lisa has spent over 26 years helping people heal, rebuild, and thrive after brain injuries, trauma, and emotional challenges. She's a double board certified neurofeedback specialist, the founder of Mind Body Neuro in Illinois and Colorado, and the driving force behind MBN Sport, where she's transforming how athletes recover and perform. In this conversation, Lisa breaks down why concussion recovery is more than just rest. We cover how brain mapping and neurofeedback are changing the game, the surprising link between concussion, aggression, and emotional control, why resetting brainwaves can restore both physical and mental function, how a personalized plan combined with neurofeedback, physical therapy, and nutrition make all the difference. Stick around, because by the end of this episode, you'll see concussion recovery in a whole new way and understand how the right approach can get the brain firing at its best again. I'm Ian Hawkins, and this is Sport is Life. The purpose of sport, as I see it, is to see your vision become a reality. Find your voice, create strong connections, and learn to trust your body. Lisa, how are you?
Doing great. How about you?
Good. I love having experts on, particularly when it's an area that's quite a big issue at the moment in sport in Australia. I'm sure it's the same where you are. They're just starting to realise the implications of repeated concussions, head injuries. I feel like they're probably only scratching the surface of what they know, and of course there's a fair bit they still don't know, but it's great to have someone like yourself that actually has done a lot of work in this space already around the impacts of concussion and what we can do about it. So it's great to have you here. How do you end up specializing in that particular area, Lisa?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Being a former athlete and having children who played all kinds of sports from a family of pretty active folks, we've seen, head injury, if not my own kids, but close friends, and the fallout from it. And I'm a mental health practitioner that has entered into the field of EEG, electroencephalogram, which is your brain rhythms. And I just feel like we can fix so many of these things. We can help with it. And now when we hear about CTE and how scary that is, I think we can head off things. So that's kind of, it's a passion of mine in addition to being in the mental health world. So we see quite a bit of this.
I love it. And I love how your own sporting journey is taking down this path. You mentioned you played college volleyball. I don't imagine there's too many head injuries there, but am I wrong? Like maybe
not,
that happens there?
Yeah, not very often. I mean, unless there's a very strange, like two people dive in for the ball. But one of my very close friend's daughters had the volleyball pole dropped on her head and had a massive concussion. Yeah, wow. Like she wasn't looking and the kids were taking the nets down. So that's not normal, typical volleyball stuff, but man, it knocked her for a loop for many, many months.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing, is head injuries can happen anywhere, and it doesn't always have to be in their sport, but they may be an athlete. So yeah, good point, but that does sound like a freak accident. Okay, let's just dive straight in. Like you mentioned, there are things that we can do, and there are things that we can, like a lot of these problems can be removed. That's been my experience too. I mentioned before we jumped on, I've worked with some people with post-head injuries as well, and it's amazing when you deal with the mental and the emotional aspect, how many of these things clear up. But I'd love to hear your perspective of what is sort of the main thing that is causing these ongoing symptoms that you're able to deal with that sort of gets immediate results.
Yeah, well, so head injury as a giant topic, right? You have lots of symptoms from, you know, difficulty with thinking, cognition stuff, pain, sleep trouble, emotional issues, personality change if it's very, very severe, or there's been multiple. But I think one of the things we see that I love, that I like working with, is people who've had a head injury or a concussion or whatever it was, and are still struggling with pain months and months later, right? So I think technically, if you've gone 3 months and you're still having symptoms, they qualify as a post-concussion syndrome. But some put that timeline much shorter. Like if they're still having symptoms at, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, they put you into that. But pain is, we kind of have a saying, like pain lives in the slow waves, which is a part of your brain waves. And so if we can address that, the relief is so good for the people. Mm. And then chronic pain can be a brain-based pattern more than a tissue or a structural damage thing. So, yeah. So if we can locate that and try to train that dysfunctional pattern back to something more efficient, the pain dissipates.
Interesting. So, and is often that dysfunctional pattern already exists to some degree before the head injury? Or is it only okay, yeah. Interesting.
I don't know. I
reaction.
Mean, because how many people do we have a baseline EEG before they get a concussion? Yeah. Not very many.
Sometimes I've found that people's patterns are already there and the injury exacerbates it and brings it more to the surface. So, yeah. Okay, so not from a data perspective, but what's your thought on just...
I would say pattern? If we have an injury or an event that causes brain dysregulation and you had any prior tendencies, let's call them, it probably would exacerbate that and make them more prominent. I do know, I think of someone that I worked with that had a stutter as a child and then was a college athlete, and they came in after their second pretty bad concussion within one calendar year and the stutter was back. So, right? Wow. Is that, you know, but without a prior EEG, I don't have any data. So, and I mean, that would be a goal to everybody gets a brain map done before their season starts, you know, every year from, I don't know, 12 to 18.
Oh, I love that. It's funny you say that. I've got someone else I've got booked in to interview in the next week or so, also a doctor, and he was talking about doing measures for, I think it was blood sugar, because when you can see the shift in the data, then it actually, you've got to have the reading beforehand. Mm-hmm. Same thing. If we get everyone to do this, which at the moment isn't realistic, but if we can get to that point, well, then we don't have to guess.
With today's situation with obesity in children, we should have it. It should be part of their physical each year, right? Then you'd have the baseline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then we're adding in, again, I guess part of it's like we do too much Band-Aid solution and not enough preventative, but basically what you're saying about there is it's preventative, because then you're not doing guesswork when people are coming back from concussions too, I guess.
Right. Yeah, we did last year baseline recordings for a college football team. For that exact reason, like, so you have this, you know, whether they were, you know, freshmen in college or seniors, fifth years, even some, you know, now you have a baseline. And if you ever need it, you have something to compare to.
Oh, love it. And what data have you found since then?
Well, when we do the baseline, we don't actually, we don't analyze it, right? We just store it because unless there's a reason to analyze, we're not, we don't really, if they asked me to, I would, but it's really, you know, just to have the data and should something happen. So there's a little bit of wait and see, but.
Yeah. Could you give an example of someone that you've worked with? Because you talked about the relief. Mm-hmm. I imagine there's a fair bit of like the physical relief from the pain, but also the mental and the emotional relief from coming out the other side of that. Have you got an example that you could share where the impact had for people?
Yeah, you know, so these aren't sports related concussions, but one that comes to mind was, well, one was water skiing. I think about it.
Yeah.
One was falling on ice and one was a car accident. Same person within 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Right. So, and they didn't even really notice at first that this pain was dissipating. But the first thing, and this is what most people notice first, is the sleep got better.
Huh.
And I have yet to work with anybody or talk to anybody who works with concussion that sleep isn't disrupted.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's, you know, we know what, when we look at the EEG, the brain waves, what patterns indicate sleep trouble. And is it a metabolic, like, because your brain metabolism gets messed up when those damage things happen. Your rhythms of your different brain waves are get all implicated. So when the sleep starts to get better, you know, I wish I had a way to say, here's the cascade.
Yeah.
But often the sleep and the pain kind of go hand in hand. This pain part might take a little longer. Yeah, but the biggest thing to me, I think, is emotional regulation and clearer thinking. And when those come in, people feel like themselves again.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
It makes me think of someone I work with. It was an older lady in her 60s, and she'd had repeated head injuries, but the most recent one was a car accident. And yeah, she was finding she was getting like losing confidence because she wasn't having that ability just to speak regularly. She was like getting stuck in her thoughts and mm-hmm. and it just took away so many of just those everyday things that we take for granted, and that sort of spiraled downwards because the more of that happens, the more down and valid you feel. And
sure.
I could agree with that, that it's the how you're feeling about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting you say with sleep, because in one of the things here in Australia when they do their well-being training for the professional teams is that, you know, talking about the 9 different indicators of health. But if you don't have the sleep one
mm-hmm.
fixed up first, well, then the other 8 you may as well throw out the window.
Well, and you know how it is if you have a bad night.
Yeah.
One bad night, how you feel. If you have chronic, it's so hard, right?
Yeah.
And your learning from the day gets consolidated during your REM sleep. Your body clears the waste products, toxins, and dead cells when you're in the deep sleep phases. So you need all those phases to happen, to flush with cerebral spinal fluid and all those things. So you can
see how the health would then continue to reduce because mm-hmm. all of those things aren't happening. Oh, that is fascinating. Mm-hmm. So what is the process that you take them through to help them to start to get back their sleep?
Well, so the way we address it is we come together first and hear, tell me everything. Tell me what's been the pattern, what's the history, what have you tried, what haven't, you know, what hasn't worked. We have some partnerships and connections with concussion clinics, like clinics that specifically work with concussion. So they're doing the physical work, like rehab and vestibular therapy and balance training and all those kinds of things. That's not my wheelhouse, right? I'm a mental health person, and they're the physical therapists or functional med or whatever they're doing.
Yep.
So, but we listen to that, we gather all the history, and then we record their brainwaves. We record the EEG. It's non-invasive. It's 10 minutes of eyes open, as sitting as still as they can, and 10 minutes of eyes closed, sitting as still as they can. Not everyone's able to do that well, but that's okay. And then I take that data and I clean it out. I clean out eye blink and swallow and muscle tension, pulse, normal human, you know, physiology stuff. So I'm just trying to see just the brain waves. And then I'm looking for patterns. I'm looking for different brain waves. Are they too strong? Are they too weak? Are they in the area they should be in the state of eyes open or eyes closed? Are they locked in patterns together when they your brain should be really fluid and flexible and rapid, right? And I'm looking for connections between networks like that communicate with each other. Are those happening? Are they not? And then we make a report. You know, we call that the brain map. That's the, it's a quantitative electroencephalogram. QEEG is the technical term for the report, but brain maps is what you'll see all over the place. But then we sit back together and go over it and usually have a lot more questions at that point after I've seen the data. You know, like, what's your diet like? And what's sleep like? And, you know, have you had a super high fever recently or other things? And then we make a plan. The training is usually part of the plan most of the time, the neurofeedback, and that is twice a week minimum. Three times is ideal, but most people just can't fit it in. And it's, you know, up to an hour. We build up time slowly, but they're watching something. And it's operant conditioning. We're reinforcing the brain waves we want. So they're watching a screen. They have one or two, maybe up to four sensors on their head. And if their brain is going the direction we want, so say slow wave is too present and we want those slow waves to be less powerful. If the brain's doing that, the screen of whatever they're watching, a movie, a show, a game, is bright and clear. The video flows smoothly. The sound is crisp. And if the brain goes back to the pattern that's been happening, it looks like a shadow comes over the screen. So it gets dark.
Yeah.
Or the sound gets quiet, or the screen stutters. There's a lot of settings you can choose from. And without really having to try, the brain will try to, you know, not consciously figure it out. The brain will want to get back to what it was engaged in, the show it was watching. It's a pleasure-seeking organ. So if it will try a whole bunch of things rapidly and find that brainwave combination that makes the screen bright again, that bright screen is positive reinforcement. And so it happens over and over again, very rapidly in a session. In one session, we have what we call protocols. Those are like their lessons. We might do two or three in one session. And it's amazing. At 7-8 minutes in, you can see as the clinician that their brain is starting to figure it out because the screen is staying brighter longer.
How good.
Right? And so it's operant conditioning. It's training the brain to follow the bright screen, the clear sound, et cetera. Over time, it'll start to show up in their regular life with subtle ways. Maybe it's better sleep. Maybe it's they didn't lose their mind driving at the other drivers that day, right?
Yeah.
Or they didn't have a pit in their stomach when they woke. Things like that. They start very small, subtle, and then the goal is to continue training until those changes are more robust and consistent to where they want them to be. And then we start to wean and say, okay, if we can hold, we just go down to once a week. You know, or once every other week. If they hold, we wean off, they're done. And we don't usually see people back.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's super fun to have that, to offer people.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, thinking about how many people who have had head injuries end up becoming dependent on a whole lot of different areas to remove that dependency, like it must be so empowering for them as well, just as people. To then be able to go out and be functioning again,
right,
and not have to worry about those sort of things.
Yeah, and I just, you know, so many people suffer for a long time.
Yeah.
Or they think they've gotten back to normal, but they're years later and they're still having rages.
Yeah, interesting.
and they have not connected that that's from the injury.
As I mean, I don't know, I can't speak for women, but for men, I know we do tolerate things for way longer than we should. That's a stubbornness or a yeah, maybe it's in a different way. And yeah, just put up. I know I did myself, like physical pain, sleep, and also now understanding that having gone through that, that I see it with other people too. Until, like, you, the way you mapped it out there, it's like a very similar process. Like, you let them feel heard. So you get them to tell everything. I think that's such an important part after any trauma, because often we people don't want to talk about it or not feel ready or just keep it all bottled up. Just externalizing is just so beneficial. Yes, there's the absolutely physical through therapy. That's important. This is not saying this is to take away from some of those things that are necessary for the physical
We need to team up. Yeah, for
Yeah,
sure.
100%. Yeah, 100%. This is not like saying our method's better than yours. It's like, how can we do this together? Love it. And then you're looking for actual data and then finding out what's going on and then giving them a plan. Like, it's when you describe it like you did there, and I know there's some technical aspects to it, but it's quite not easy, but simple in terms of mapping that out. And I think people will understand that. Hopefully people listening to this and get that, that yeah, it's because what I was going to say is, like, often men are a bit worried about what they'll find, I think. If I go find out about this, like, what might it be, whether that's physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever. But it's like, what if it was just a simple process like you've described today, Lisa? Like, yeah, I love
Well, and what if you do find out and you can change it?
it. Yeah, yes,
Right?
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and we just heard the report on, and I don't know if you guys tune into this down there, but there was a shooter that went after the NFL in New York, the offices, and he had written, he thought he had CTE from high school football,
Yeah.
and he was clearly very mentally ill. It was a terrible, terrible tragedy, and he killed multiple people and himself. But they got the report back and he did have CTE. And I think, what if we could head that off? What if we could help those people get their emotional regulation back? That's huge. And I don't know, can we cure CTE? I'm not saying, I have no idea. I'm not a researcher, medical researcher, but man, that would be amazing.
I got goosebumps all through that. Like,
Oh.
absolutely. Because when you were saying that, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, well, what if we could do that for everyone? So that, because you talked about, the rage in traffic, like, that's pretty prevalent, right? So, what if we could take everyone through these processes so that they didn't have whatever they've got going on the inside, that they just tolerate, they tolerate.
Well, and you know, I mean, you guys have who you had on a couple weeks ago about the rugby, and he played cricket and then went back to rugby, you know, and all that. It's so. It's like the sport you love to watch, but I watch like through my fingers. That's American football for me, right? And it's a wonderful sport, but it's awful at the same time.
Exactly. Oh, our in Sydney, where I am, rugby league is like just had the our equivalent of the Super Bowl on the weekend just gone, and we're season ticket holders and we're there every week, and it's just brutality,
We
and
know.
like my son's talked about playing at different times, and my wife's always the same. She's like, oh, I don't know if I couldn't watch it, and like, we're laughing about it, but it's what they put their body through is crazy, crazy. So let's like backpedal, because you talked about you'd had some experience in it's you've got a sports background, you've got that background, but like, what did you study at college? Like, was it were you always heading down that helping people path, medical path, like?
I studied psychology in undergrad. I went in psych and then I wiggled a little bit and then I went back to psych and finished there. And then I I went back to grad school 2 years after undergrad, I think. And if you go into a psychology major in the States, you have to go on if you want to, you can do like research work or stuff with just your bachelor's degree, but you can't get a license. So you need a graduate degree for that. And it just always kind of fit me. I love hearing what makes people tick. And I like all ages. I love little kids and I love teenagers and I love, so it's a good fit for me. And it's never dull. You can always find something new to study or whatever, but the neurofeedback fits even better because it's data and not just talking. It's the combination, and I love that. I love that it's data driven and that there's scientific backing, good solid research showing this is effective, and it's medication free, and it's gets people off meds even sometimes, and can help with all kinds of tough stuff when people have tried so many other things. So, and then to build in the athlete part, it's just like another slice of the pie that fits so well. It's nice.
Oh, so much of that I could relate to. The medication, like I was just thinking now, I'm speaking out loud as I was thinking about it. Like, I wonder how many of those past head injuries I've had that have had an impact. But it was like I had that sort of dependency on painkillers and just a pattern of random pains coming up. I'll just take some paracetamol and we'll be good. And then learning that you can actually change these things. I actually remember talking to a mentor. It was 2013, and she just sort of opened my mind up to like, well, what if you didn't think that way? What if you looked at it from a different perspective? What if I remember just thinking, oh man, like, well, I'm going to stop taking those things and I'm just going to find another way, which has meant that I've been stubbornly putting myself through some challenging experiences in the sort of few years following that. But also then, yeah, just learning what else is on the other side of that and what are the
Well, yeah,
possibilities.
and I mean another piece is the nutrition, right? And hydration, and there's some, dropping to keto quickly after head injury can be really helpful, those kinds of things.
Okay, interesting.
Because anything that's going to help with inflammation, right? Because your brain's going to swell. And it can't swell out because there's a skull there. So it swells into itself and like pressure. And that's ischemia, or it cuts off blood supply. And then, if you don't get that down as quickly as possible. But so there are other pieces to it. That's why I like the team approach between the physical doctors, nutritionists, or functional med, doing the neuro. Like there's a lot of options.
And it's exciting to me because it's like I still think we're just scratching the surface for all of those areas. Like I still think there's so much further they go with sports nutrition. I still can't comprehend that those sugar-filled energy drinks are the best we can do for refilling electrolytes and we're talking about inflammation. Well, there's like plenty of data now to support the impact of sugar on inflammation. So you can, is that like, oh, I don't know, do you work in that space at all, like immediately following where you actually advise around nutrition, or is that another area altogether?
Well, we have a couple partnerships, but with so Dr. Michael Pierce is a functional neurologist. And he works with us in Colorado, but he's available anywhere because I'm in both Colorado and Illinois. But that idea of like what are the best supplements immediately after an injury and what diet and nutrient approach is the most helpful. So I hand that off to the nutrition and functional med experts. That's not my wheelhouse, but it is fascinating. And I mean, the chemistry can't be denied. Like if you cut out the sugar and the carbs, you're cutting out the inflammatory agents. That's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what you described there about you coming through college and that naturally inclined to be helping people and going down that path. So once you come out of there, how do you sort of get like what was the pathway from okay, well, I want to be helping more people in this space. Was there some specific moments that took you? I always believe that, you know, we have these moments in our life that happen for a reason to steer us where we're meant to be. Like even me just sort of getting off track a bit with my coaching and then sport finding me again because people are reaching out to me asking specific questions about sport. Can you work with my young athlete? Can you do this? Can you do that? And I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I need to be going back there. Was it kind of like that? Like life sort of pointed you in the right direction?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I kind of had this, okay, I'm going to do psych. So I'm going to do psychology undergrad. I'm going to go back and get either a PhD or my master's or whatever. And then started in the field and worked in couple of places, but private practice where you're doing therapy every day. And I had a couple clients that I'd worked with for quite a while, and we were just stuck. You know, they're on multiple medications they've tried. We've tried, I'm maybe the third, fourth, fifth therapist, right? And they're stuck. I'm stuck. I feel like my bucket's empty. And I just kept thinking, there's got to be more that I can offer to these lovely people that are struggling so hard, right? And I went to a training for certification for trauma. And I tell this story all the time, but it still makes me laugh. It was before COVID, so there's, you know, 250 people sitting in the room. And it was a week long or four day long training. And it's 8 a.m. and it's the very first day. And everybody's got their coffee and their tea and they're just getting their notebooks out. And the gentleman who hosted, he was the presenter, was an older gentleman and he had a cane. And he stood up front and he pointed the cane at all of us. And he started yelling. He's like, you people are doing therapy like it's 1970. You know, and it was like 2016.
Yeah.
And everybody's eyes got big. We're looking at each other because we don't know anybody. We're all, you know, there just for the training.
Yeah.
And but he was right. And he got everybody's attention in a big way. And his main point was that there's new innovations and there are other options than just doing the same thing of making your client spit out their story or CBT, which is great, but it's not the end all. And so that was the first time I'd ever heard about neurofeedback. And he wrote about The Body Keeps the Score, which I know you guys were talking about on an episode a couple back.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I literally got that book right away and read it. And I thought, this is so a perfect fit for me with the data piece and the science, but I still get to work with people.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the start of the deep dive. And learning it and then realizing all the applications you can use with neuro. There's a lot of people that will specialize, right? So autism addiction or ADD or all kinds. I can't even think. There's tons of stuff. Anytime, you know, if there's a specific struggle, you can find a way to help it. So that was kind of how we went in this. And then having college athletes, so, you know, one was a lacrosse player and one was a football player. You know, you think about their poor heads. So, and as I was learning, you know, more and more about neurofeedback and working on my board certifications and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love how those messages find us. It's funny for me. It was like, the Body Keeps the Score was, I was already doing that sort of work just from my own experience of like, I'd had all these physical ailments for years of punishing it through sport and falling out of trees and all the things you do when you're younger, over-consuming different things and then going through different processes because like you described in your bio, you love helping people that have, what was the quote? They've tried everything. And they've still not got anywhere. And that's where I was at. I've tried all these things, but I can't keep tolerating this stuff. And it's amazing when you make that commitment to yourself, what shows up. And a friend of mine introduced me to the book, The Body Keeps the Score. I'm like, oh, this is the, like you said, the science. This is like the meat on the bones for all the things I've already been doing that helps people understand. And I reference it all the time because it's something about that legitimacy of, okay, here's someone who's gone through the whole spectrum of these things and has then decided to go and get some data to support it. And it's like similar to what you said. Like, now we've got data.
Well, and then I'm like what you're saying, the tip of the iceberg, right? Or we're just getting under the surface of this. There's so much stuff going on research-wise with neuroscience and finding out, but not just in the brain though, like the nerves, the nervous system, the gut brain access and all that stuff. It's amazing. So yeah, it's cool stuff.
Yeah, the gut brain, the heart brain, like all of these parts of our body, they're like if probably a lot of people have known anecdotally for a long time, but people are now just okay, we need to put some real science behind this breath, like the power of conscious breathing, all of these different things. And it's interesting, I was watching a guy the other day, he was saying, if you're consciously having to choose these things, well, you're still not really there. I'm like, actually, that's a really good point. We learn these processes, but that's kind of like a process to allow our body to get back to doing what it knows how to do naturally when we get out of our own way, right? So is that like a lot of what you're doing when you're working with people from the psychological perspective, but also, that other, it's almost like let's get you out of your own way so you can let your body do what it's meant to do.
I had a great aunt that her kind of whole thing was that you have the wisdom inside you to figure out what you need to figure out. And I think that applies, right, to so many of these things. And even with brain damage from an injury, the regular functional efficiencies are there. Maybe we need to reinforce them or unearth them. And there are types of neurofeedback that are stimulation. So they're actually putting a tiny bit of energy into you. So there's several kinds like that, like neural stimulation. Microcurrent is another one that's like, and the theory is with microcurrent, you bump the brain with this just a frequency that it's already record, it's measuring, so it bumps it back to try to get the brain to move and re-regulate on its own.
Interesting.
There's lots of types. That's one type, right? So there are people that think that's all you need to do, and they have very successful practices helping people with that approach. I tend to pick and choose bunches of approaches that fit the one client the best. So nobody has the same path here, because everybody's brain's different. So.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that because I think that's important, people, for the listeners to realize whether they're working with people or not. But like, there's never a one size fits all. You can build certain structures, like you said, here's the process we go through, but then the actual plan has to be unique, has to be
Absolutely.
individual. Yeah. And even just like how few people have a plan for their health. Like for I imagine for a lot of people you're helping, that the plan you give them is the first time they've had anything that's been a structure to better their health.
Sometimes, yeah, for sure. And the first time anybody's listened, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I love about this medium is that like letting people have a voice and you tell your story, it helps other people to realize, well, yeah, okay, maybe my story's not so like so bad, so boring, so like everyone's important, like what they've got to say. And that's what I was saying before. I love that that's the first thing you get them to do. I know there's a reason for it as well, like you needed to get that data from so you can do what you're going to do. But yeah, it's such a powerful exercise in itself. So you said you kind of got to that point where you started learning more about the body, and you said you've had that experience with watching different people in your life around head injuries. Like, what was sort of the next step that took you specifically into that area of the brain?
Well, next step. I think working through board certifications, you have to cover so much material and have, strong mentors and go over cases and stuff. And the ones that just drew me were always kind of that route. And yeah, it'll still be an endless learning process, finding people in the field that have specialized in that already. And picking their brain. It's a really cool field in the sense that people are really collaborative and friendly. And I mean, there's always somebody that's not going to be a team player, but I found it to be so just supportive and people, we all want this, the word to get out there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And because in the States, the insurance doesn't cover it very often. It's often limited to those who can afford it, which is a shame.
Yeah.
It's slowly, I keep hearing about different policies covering it or whatever. Or we have colleagues that are in Canada that they don't have to worry about that because it's covered because it's the way they work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, to me, I'm kind of an endless learner too. So that's, the brain is the frontier that we're the least knowledgeable on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I guess it's kind of frustrating for people experiencing it, people who work in that space, the people making these decisions for sporting organisations. A lot of it's like, well, we don't know until afterwards about CT and all these mm-hmm. different things. But what I love here is you're presenting this whole system, really, because it's not just you; it's a whole lot of different mm-hmm. elements to it. We can't guarantee we're going to be able to change what shows up in the brain after death, but we can certainly make a huge positive impact on their well-being for the rest of their life.
Yes, for sure. You know, and even like that, I had looked up, we have directories for providers, and I just looked up Australia, like what's down there, and I think there were 40 to 60 of neurofeedback certified people and EEG, another 40. You know, down, so it's everywhere, you know, and often Australia or parts of Europe or other countries who don't rely on meds so much, they found this and worked so hard to learn it because it's an option.
Yeah.
So it's not.
You say that you've done that research because my head was going the same. I'm like, okay, how do I get you out here?
You don't need to. I want to come, but I think I could find you somebody. Yeah, I mean, I looked and I thought, oh, that's pretty good. You know, it's a giant place, but there are practitioners all over.
Hmm. Yeah, giant place in terms of distance.
Square miles, yeah.
Yeah, but not quite the same in terms of population.
Yeah.
So what about your own experience? Like what I've found for I think everyone who gets into the space of helping people, they've had their own different traumatic experience or they've had some sort of setback. Like is there one or two that you can think of that like really, because you said being a self-learner, to me self-learning comes from a space of, oh, here's a whole lot of gaps in my life that I didn't realize I had. and then you start discovering it, you're like, oh, cool, like I want to learn more about this. Like I want to make like almost myself my most important learning experience.
Yeah, I don't know about that as much. I come from a family of education's important kind of value system. And so mm-hmm. curiosity was encouraged. My mom dealt with five of us. So, and I think she did a good job of, you know, like, we'll go figure it out. What do you think? You know, and, but leading me into psych in general, the biggest thing I think of was a friend who went to a counselor in our school and was having a really hard time with one of her parents. And she shared with the counselor and the counselor told the parent, and she shouldn't have. And then there was a bunch of fallout, right? Mm-hmm. Repercussions on my friend. And I just was so upset that professional did that. And we knew the rules, right? Confidentiality and when you're able to break that and when you're not. And that is kind of the thing I think of the most that I thought, I want to do that. And I don't want to ever, you know, screw over the kids in high school or whatever. But, you know, and just the curiosity, because there's always something to learn.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it, that happened? Like, it's particularly at that age, like, trust is so hard to gain and then so easily lost. Mm-hmm. What was the sort of fallout from that specifically, like, for you, for the person you knew? Was it like, did they go down like a path then that took
Well, years? At the time, I was worried about her safety. Right, because of what had been going on. And then it was, you know, just being worried for her mentally because she was so in such a tough spot. And you don't have a lot of choices as a young teen, right? You live in your parents' home and you have to deal with it. And so that kind of thing. I think, you know, thinking backwards, whether she came out of it great or not, she made the impression that she came out okay, right?
Okay, yeah, that's good. I guess like when I've had this conversation with a fair few people, it's like when you start learning this stuff about yourself, like I don't know if you've got, oh, you have children?
Yeah, I have three.
So then you start going, oh my, what untold damage have I done to my children? But now it's more like, well, but then they need to go through their own experience of unlearning and relearning, and who am I to deprive them of that journey?
And making mistakes, right? Like, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think every parent, and I actually think a lot of people, when their kids get to the age that when they went through tough things, those things surge for them, their own memories and their own experiences that were hard. But man, does it make the mama bear come out, right? Like, or daddy bear, I guess.
Children are like the best teachers because they just mirror back to us all of our fears, insecurities, maybe some of those areas about ourselves that we don't particularly love. Like I remember listening to one of my two playing, like I think it was Barbie or something. And they were acting out a party, and all these different things are going on at the party. I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't miss anything. And it's just going.
They pick it all up. Even when you think you're covert. It's true. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's come back to the neurological side. So what's, if you wanted to go into an organization, for example, where they're dealing with this sort of stuff, like what's sort of the key message that you'd want to share with them to give them an understanding of what's possible for their athletes?
A couple things. I think the first thing that comes to mind is get a brain map, right? Get a baseline QEG done, record your EEG, so you know what you're dealing with, right? That's number one, but also that there's a lot of mental fallout from head injury that we don't connect very often. And the thinking stuff and memory, you know, having trouble with brain fog or executive function, word finding, mood, things like depression or anxiety that can come on, or mood swings, you know, up and down and not really, really feeling untethered or unstable emotionally, or extremes like rages or aggression, kind of antisocial stuff. And then the sleep piece, right? So all those pieces, that those can be helped. We can do stuff about it. And it doesn't have to be medications or dealing with this, you know, sleep aid for the rest of your life or feeling like you're not sure who you are anymore. Like that can be, we can help that. So.
Absolutely. So good. I want to dive more into the rage and the aggression because it's, again, it's a all too common thing. Again, we come back to what I was talking about before of like, okay, it would be good to take all people through this sort of process because and how prevalent that is. But what specifically happens to the brain that, or do we know what specifically happens to the brain that brings on more of that aggression or random rage, as you call them?
Well, I mean, it's not a perfect equation, but the front right of your brain, you know, the frontal section, and on the right side of that, is a lot of the functionality of what we call emotional gating. So the ability to open the gate to emotions or keep it closed, right? Knowing I can let this out right now or this is not an appropriate place, and having that gate be mobile when needed kind of gets, so a lot of head impacts are forward, right? I mean, some are to the rear, but even if you hit the front right of your head, your brain will slosh, right? A terrible image, but it's true. So it will hit the front and then it'll hit the back and then maybe come back and hit the front again, right? Like it moves in the side of the skull. So that front right section has a lot to do with emotional regulation and affective regulation, like your ability to respond appropriately. And as we mature, you know, your responses are different than a two-year-old, right? Which who just has the meltdowns and the tantrums and the flings and the noodle, wet noodle stuff. But when we see that show up again, we're in trouble, right? Because if you're an adult and you're having a meltdown, a screaming rage, or getting violent, so that part, you know, and there are deeper brain structures. The limbic system is a whole system of areas, but it's your emotional connectivity kind of area. And the amygdala is beneath that. And that's your base emotions, anger, fear.
Fight or flight.
Yeah. So it depends where the impact is, right? But it's, you know, there's research out there, I don't have it in front of me, but about incarcerated individuals for violent crimes and the amount of head injury they find when they interview them in early life.
Yeah.
And then they end up down that path, right? There's a lot of other factors, of course, but I always found that fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, because the circumstances around those head injuries would have an impact for them. Psychologically, mentally, emotionally, right. All of those things.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, when you hear the...
Exacerbated.
When you hear families talk that about their loved ones that are, they're suspecting CTE or they've died from CTE and it's been diagnosed postmortem, like a lot of them say, they were not the same person and the anger was insane, you know, and trying to navigate that as loved ones, children of them or spouses. So... Yeah, I mean, it just gets everything off kilter. There's other theories, too, that it has to do with metabolism as well. So, like, in the brain, the nutrients and the glucose and oxygen and all of it.
And all of those things are impacted by trauma, too. Mm-hmm. So you have any sort of event, then, yeah, the body is going to react in a traumatic way. Yeah, really interesting. We've had some instances of like former athletes taking their own lives,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder how much of that is what you talked about there, not just rage, but just that inability to regulate emotions at all. And mm-hmm. like I just wonder how much more head noise goes on as well as a result of maybe some things they do know about, some of the diagnosed symptoms, maybe some of the things they don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, and the idea that there's areas that where your hope, you know, feeling hopeless or helpless, losing that ability to see that things can change and get better, that's illness, right? It's injury causing illness. And it's not logic. It's, you know, at that point when they're ready to take their life, it's just not a rational place.
Lisa, I got also memory in your bio about helping not just people but families as well, and knowing just how important that is when we're working with anyone is that. Well, they live in an environment. There are other people that have an influence. Mm-hmm. What's some of the work you do around families when you're helping someone that helps get like the whole team basically mm-hmm. back on track and heading the right direction?
Yeah, I think that's an important piece to bring up. Education in general is huge because people jump online, right? And they look up stuff, but you know how that goes. It can be, you know, all anecdotal and full of beans, or it can be really scientific and they can't kind of calculate what's trying to be said or how to apply it to their own world. But coping skills for a spouse or a parent of a child that's in this, support systems for this, you know, there's a Reddit concussion group that is sometimes fantastic and sometimes lunacy, but I mean, I think these people are at least searching for some support and hearing, you know, they're not alone and there are ways to get through and all these things. But it's a whole system, right? It's not just a single person. And very rarely is it just a single person. So those pieces matter big time.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the sort of number one misconception you still see out there around concussion and head injuries that it's almost like mainstream thought that you'd be passionate about helping people see that it's not mm-hmm. that way?
The first one that comes to mind is that you have to be knocked unconscious to have a concussion. Mm. You have to lose consciousness, and that's absolutely not true. And you can have a concussion from not even impacting something with your head, just being whipped around or your head whipped back and forth can concuss you. So that's one that comes to mind. Number two is that you're going to return to play in 2 weeks and be fine. And that's the most dangerous period. Oops. But, you know, like,
during these things.
I mean, I think the return to play protocols, they've gotten better, and I think the schools are really, really learning, and luckily. Mm. But, you know, like I said, I watch football through my fingers half the time. Yeah. But, you know, I watched, Tua Tagovailoa from Miami Dolphins in an absolutely horrific several in one season. Like, what? What are we doing?
How many?
Well,
multiple.
Multiple, two for sure on national television, where there are postures that happen with the arms and the head and these things that it's undeniable that that's his brain responding to the impact. And, you know, in one season, it's just so awful. But so, yeah, I would say a concussion doesn't take that you have to be unconscious to get a concussion. And that, maybe not a misnomer, but what you need to know is that the period of healing after the first impact is the most important, that you don't get a second impact. So the return to play timeline needs to be very, very careful.
Mm. Yeah, I can see a day where, like at the moment here, it's 11-day stand down. Like I can see a day where it's longer, like boxers. Mm-hmm. Boxers is like they have to take mandatory 3 months or something like that. Like straight.
That's
up.
Good.
Yeah. What are you thinking in terms of what's the ideal
time? I think it should be data driven, right?
Good. Yeah.
Because there are ways to test for inflammatory markers in blood, and there are EEG capabilities to see what is going on. Is there a change in the positive direction of what you had either before or immediately after? Cognitive. Functional testing, like the schools do here. There's one called IMPACT that stands for something, and then there's another big one that a lot of the schools subscribe to these services so they can do baseline for their students, but they should have a return test they have to pass.
Yeah.
So,
For people listening who maybe have had repeated concussions, particularly back to back, what's the message for them? Because like, yes, it's important to be in that space, but it doesn't mean that there's not a lot that can be still done if they've had repeated concussions, right? It's not to say that that means that that's a death sentence or anything.
No, but, you know, it's important, though, to go get assessed. Really, really important. And get a plan for getting back to optimized health, because we know what CTE comes from is repeated injury. So, and they're not even concussions. That they say now, CTE is not from, you don't have to just be concussed repeated, you can have just repeated head impact.
Interesting.
So go get assessed. Yeah, that would be number one, I would think.
Yeah.
So.
Again, it's back to that.
Stubborn.
That stubborn is what we tolerate. And again, I think for something like that, I think there would be an element of fear of, okay, well, what do I find out if I go and do that? Mm-hmm. Do you reckon there's an element also of the unknown? Like where's the right place for me to go? Because there is so much information, and you've talked about it now, like mm-hmm. you work with a number of different fields. It's great to hear you working together, but there's probably mm-hmm. a lack of a clear pathway, I imagine, too.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. I mean, I would think the starting place would be your primary care physician, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. start there. But if you don't get anywhere with them, what do you do, right? I mean, functional medicine practitioners have good backgrounds in this type of stuff. Physical therapists, if you can do that without your piece, you know, your primary care, I don't know. It depends on where you live, I suppose. But even a massage therapist, right? Like anybody, if you're like, hey, so there are, yeah, there's a lot of options out there. Neurologists, I mean, they're supposed to be the doctor of the brain and the neurological system. So just thinking like, what is there out there, right? There are concussion clinics, right? You can Google, you know, just in Colorado area, there's like four or five I could name off right around Denver area. So yeah, those things exist.
Not sure how prevalent they are here in Australia, but I'm going to be doing some research after you said that you had a quick look and you found a whole lot of different places. Yeah, really, really interesting stuff, Lisa, and very helpful. Like, hopefully people listening have had their eyes opened up to a whole lot of, different ways of looking at things. I know for me you've posed a lot of things there, for me to do a bit more digging around and a bit more research. Mm-hmm. I definitely love that you've brought in the data. I think that's something that definitely talk well to supporting environments.
Mm-hmm.
It does sound like that in the US you're a fair way ahead of us in terms of the protocols and what's in place. But I guess at the same time you mentioned the NFL player, maybe ultimately, unfortunately, results still talk louder than health, yeah, perhaps. But I appreciate you coming on and sharing all this. I appreciate your assistant who reached out and found me over here and sent the invitation to get you on, because it's been fantastic. Is there anything else you'd want to share just about the work that you do or what people need to know before we wrap it up?
I think one last thing would be, if you're going to go through an EEG or the neurofeedback route, find someone. There's two professional associations that certify practitioners, and you want someone who really knows what they're doing. So there's a lot of rigorous study and time and internship and mentorship that goes into getting those certifications. So if you find someone, so one of them is called BCIA.org, Board Certification International Alliance. It's a mouthful, but they're international boards. They're all over the world, and there are practitioners all over. And the other one's called IQCB.org, and they have directories. So you can literally put it in via city and state or a country and find who's near you and who's not. Because there is a lot of stuff out there that says it's neurofeedback, and it's not quite that. So you want to, you know, if you're going to mess with your brain, you want to be careful. So
the right way.
That would be the most, yeah. And I'm happy to answer questions, you know, anytime somebody wants to email and ask me, what do I do?
Yeah.
You know, awesome. I'm happy to do that.
Well,
yeah.
We'll make sure we get your details there in the show notes. So if people want to reach out, they can. And thank you for giving that open invite. Hopefully you get a few people reaching out. Hopefully not too many, though. Maybe that means we need to open up a bit of a global network here. And
I bet there's more there than you realize. So that's good.
No doubt. It's, mm-hmm, yeah, there's always more than what you think there is until you start digging. And I appreciate you helping me today with the digging. I know the listeners would have got a heap out of this, not just about concussion, but just about that holistic approach to anything they're going through and the importance of actually going and starting to take the steps to do something. So thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Today's conversation with Lisa Kramer gives us a lot to think about when it comes to concussion, brain health, and performance. Recovery isn't just about rest. Understanding your brain and creating a personalized plan is key. Challenges with emotional regulation and aggression after concussion are real, but also measurable and treatable. Data-led approaches like neurofeedback and brain mapping can make all the difference. Physical therapy, nutrition, and consistent follow-up aren't optional. They're part of the full recovery picture. Whether you're an athlete, a sports parent, or someone who wants to protect and optimize your brain, the lessons from Lisa show how targeted strategies and understanding your own brain can change the game, literally and figuratively. Take these insights, apply them to your own life or team, and start building a smarter, stronger approach to performance and recovery. You've taken the time to listen to this whole episode. Now it's time to take action. Commit to one thing you've learned today and make it happen. And to avoid any obstructions, join the Sport is Life movement by clicking on the link in the show notes.